Hi, this is Paul Stanley from KISS. You know who I am. I'm the lead singer of KISS, even though Gene sings quite a bit. I wanted to thank everybody who is the producer for Radio Labyrinth. Now, Radio Labyrinth happens to be one of my favorite podcasts in the entire world. You know, I like them so much, I think they're worth a deuce. So let's get hotter than hell. Let's talk about all these wonderful people who produce Radio Labyrinth. First off, Jason Chappell, Mike Hall, Sean Hall, Chad Shepard, Al McKeon, Daniel Pitts, Mike Spitler, Andrew Hopkins, Jonathan Wilson, Keith Tate, Brian Smith, Steve Knutson, Michelle, oh no, it's not Michelle. I know a lot of Michelles though. It's Melissa Knowles. I bet you she has a KISS record. Leslie Norman, John Sutherland, Garrett Kemble, Mike D. I wonder what the D stands for. Eric Malmstrom, Matt Carter, Beth Van Elswick. Now that's the last one, but you could become a Radio Labyrinth producer. Just go to patreon.com/Tim Andrews. It's not as, you know, cool as KISS or anything, but hey, listen, the best part of waking up is Radio Labyrinth in your cup.
You got cash in your pocket, look harder. Donate to the Attack of the Dock Kickstarter. It's gonna be fun, interviews are gonna rock. Chris Gore is making Attack of the Dock. Me, I did my thing like you never saw before. I used to be a star on G4. Doing my thing all day, don't you know? My name is Zach Selwyn, it's Attack of the Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Season 4, Episode 42 of Radio Labyrinth. Tim Andrews and Jeff Leboff with you this week. Stephanie is out and Autumn has the night off.
As you, per usual.
As well, she's been busy.
You know, fucking Autumn.
You know what John Lennon says, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans.
Sorry, bleep that. Beeping
I'm
Autumn.
I'm not bleeping, but you get it. It's too much of a pain in the ass. But you know what you do, you just stop swearing.
Sorry, bleeping Autumn.
Stop swearing. Hey, thanks again to Josh Warren for last week's episode. That was a lot of fun. I listened to it, and it really made me laugh. He's a funny guy.
He's doing a little crowdfunding, too, if you want to look on his Facebook page.
He's doing some crowdfunding?
He's working on a series.
Yeah.
A TV series.
Right.
Or maybe a web series that's going to be about some friends who are, like, sucked into a LARP.
Yeah, I watched
live-action role play.
Yeah, I watched an extended D&D scene thing from it. Yeah. It's great. It's really cool, and they did it right here, I believe. So
he's doing a little crowdfunding too. So we're speaking about crowdfunding tonight.
And I'm going to be doing a little crowdfunding in your butt.
Nah, no, thank you.
No, yeah, well, why not?
I'll pass.
Because you're a jerk. You're lazy. Let's see. It is. You can go to our Facebook page, the Radio Labyrinth Facebook page, and check out the campaign.
Yeah, he posted in the Radio Shack also.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a tight-knit group of high school friends reuniting for a party or whatever, and they play D&D, and they get sucked in this world. It's funny. It's interesting. Check it out. Action Show Studios. Yes. Well, yeah, it's right there, so go check it out. Tonight on the show, we have Chris Gore, who we've had on the show a couple times before. Jeff, explain who Chris Gore is.
He's the editor of Film Threat magazine, which was big in the independent cinema days, like, you know, the 90s.
The early 90s when it really took off, right? You got me into that magazine. It was cool. It was published by Hustler.
Right.
And publications, not the magazine.
If you want to go back and I'll find out and mention it somewhere in the episode, but he was on one of our Dragon Con episodes a couple of years ago.
Right.
And we got really into his history with Hustler and, you know, him working with Larry Flint.
Yeah.
And all that. But he was also on Attack of the Show, which was on the G4 network.
Right.
And the G4 network basically got screwed. They got bought out or canceled or whatever and turned into the Esquire network, which then itself failed.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah.
Esquire. I like G4.
Yeah, G4 was awesome.
When we lived
every fucking show was great on that channel.
I know. When we lived together, they used to show
Cops for like 20 hours a day, but all their original programming that they had from like 7 till 10 p.m. was awesome.
You watched it every night, and I sort of got into it too.
Yeah.
I liked it. I like Olivia Munn.
Olivia Munn came from Attack of the Show.
And who was that guy that was with
Kevin him? Prayer. Yeah, he's now on Hack My Life on True TV.
Oh, so he's still working.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll find out where he is with that. I remember it was 2 years ago he was doing the crowdfunding campaign.
He did the same thing when he brought Film Threat back online.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, put up a Kickstarter and he didn't promote it very much.
Right.
He just was like, let's see what happens. And it went a couple weeks and then it didn't go anywhere. So he closed it down and he realized this is not the right way to do it.
Right.
Let me do a bunch of work and, you know, make it exciting for people. And, you know, put some perks up there.
Percocets?
No, perks.
Oh, like, perks, yes.
You know, for different backers, there are different levels of perks. Yeah, you get
to hear podcasts that you can only get through that, and he'll explain it to us, but if you're a donor or a contributor. So there's that.
So he did that, and he put the campaign back up, and then it was successful. He raised enough money to get Film Threat back online,
mm-hmm.
and he's still working on that. But at the time that we talked to him 2 years ago, he wanted to do this documentary about Attack of the Show and just the history of G4 and Attack of the Show specifically. And he put it up and then took it down like immediately.
No.
And then decided again to do it the right way. And so he's got a lot of promotion, a lot of people.
So we're
tweeting about it and on Instagram.
Where is he tonight? Is he in New York City?
I think he's in California.
Oh, because Film Threat's at the New York Comic Con.
They may be. I don't know.
Or did that just happen? We'll find out.
I think New York Comic Con's over.
It's over. Okay. All right. So, yeah. So stick around for that. That'll be fun. And let's see. What else? Oh, guys, get our merch. Buy our new Radio Labyrinth Pod Pals t-shirts. We have regular tees, long sleeve tees. Three quarter length sleeved baseball.
You're used to just saying 3/4 inch.
Yeah, I know, because I add an extra quarter. 3/4 sleeve length baseball tees, and we have hoodies. You can see all of them on our merch page.
And we're probably going to be doing that bowling thing in a couple weeks, so get those shirts quick.
Right. You can see all these on our merch page at RadioLabyrinthPodcast.com, so order yours today. Steph asked me today if we were doing that in November or if we could move it back and maybe do a Christmas thing. So we'll talk about it more. Don't forget to rate and review us. If you use iTunes, please give us 5 stars and write a nice review. If you ask in your review, we will read it in a voice of your choice, either Tim or Autumn, and then we'll rate your review, and that's always a lot of fun. Follow us on Twitter at @radio_labyrinth, on Facebook, facebook.com/radiolabyrinth, and Instagram, where Steph really shines.
I love those little videos.
Yeah, she does really fun stuff, @radiolabyrinth. And speaking of crowdfunding, you can become a patron for Radio Labyrinth. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a Radio Labyrinth patron, help us along, and get some rewards. To find out what they are, go to patreon.com/TimAndrews and check it all out. So you want to talk to Chris Gore?
Yeah, he's ready.
All right.
Hey there, radios. This is Dean, a.k.a. Rockdale Tiger, inviting you to listen to this week's episode of Mike TV as we recap the season premiere of HBO's Watchmen. Join Lisa and I as we discuss Troubles in Tulsa, the inconvenience of raining cephalopods, and what happens when a cow meets a machine gun. All this and more on this week's episode of Mike TV. And don't forget to watch new episodes of Watchmen on HBO every Sunday at 9 p.m.
Radio Labyrinth is sponsored by Atlanta Pizza in Euro, 1565 Georgia 138 in beautiful Conyers, Georgia. Atlanta Pizza in Euro is a longtime local favorite, serving the best pizzas, euros, Italian beef sandwiches, hot subs, spaghetti, lasagna, and Greek salads in a relaxed, casual setting since 1983.
Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/ATL Pizza. Interact with other diners, check out the menu, and even start your order. Or AtlantaPizzaEuro.com.
Hey, joining us right now, are you in California?
I am in California, yes.
Wow, joining us all the way from the West Coast. I don't know why I'm saying that. Chris Gore, welcome back to Radio Labyrinth. Jeff and I are happy to have you. Great, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for calling me.
Yeah,
we're really looking forward to talking to you about this project you got going on.
Well, let's dive right in.
Now, we had talked about this a couple years ago when we ran into you at Dragon Con and we had a fun show. You were talking back then about Attack of the Doc, and now it sounds like it's ready to go.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's funny because I was actually working on a different documentary before, a documentary about Film Threat called Film Threat Sucks. And while I was archiving material for that, I kept running across material, you know, from Attack of the Show. Photos and media and videos. I mean, I'm talking about like videos shot on like a Moto Q. I don't even know if you remember that phone. And it struck me that like, oh, this is really interesting. I'm just going to put this in a separate folder, whatever. And I had so much stuff and I kind of learned a lot about the archiving process for a documentary that I got interested. Well, like maybe there's something here. And it was really amazing to kind of see like views of the show that people had never seen before, because while I was on the show doing DV Tuesday on Tuesdays and then would occasionally guest host and do little movie segments, you know, I was also a fan of the show. So I, you know, I would watch all of the show except for myself. So I was sort of had one foot in it and one foot on the other side being on the show. But I also, because, you know, my duties on the show are relatively light compared to, you know, the main host, Kevin Olivia, I had the opportunity to take pictures and video. And I mean, I just did it for my own personal, you know, fun just to have it. And then I realized I wasn't the only one doing it. There were a lot of other people that worked on the show that were just doing like little behind the scenes or this here and there, you know, of what it was like to work on the show. And it got me thinking like at where we are right now, like in the culture, like I kind of feel like things are very divided. And when you look back at Attack of the Show, which is very recent, right? I mean, it's not that long ago that the show existed. It ran from 2005 to 2013. And whenever sort of something major happened in the world of tech or video games or pop culture, it was discussed on Attack of the Show. And I don't think that there's any sort of central place where people talk about those things anymore. I feel like, you know, Attack of the Show inspired a lot of people to start their own YouTube channels and talk about their own specific areas of interest. But there's not a central place where that conversation is had. And I think that Kevin really represented that in terms of his segment called The Loop, where they would talk about that or the news. And it was kind of like, let's all get together and laugh about these crazy things on the internet and also have like serious discussions about video games and tech and all that. And I feel like that's been lost. And as I've seen the culture become more divided, it's, you know, just looking back at a recent time in our history is like, wow, we were way more together on a lot of these issues, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a good point that back in, say, it's 2006 or whatever, you'll find out everything you need to know by watching G4 or watching Attack of the Show. And then now you have 7,000 personal blogs and 150 people on Twitter, all with check marks, comment. I mean, it's just...
And everybody's got a podcast now.
Right, including us.
Everybody, yeah. And that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing that media has been democratized, but there isn't a central place where we have a conversation. And I
right.
think that's you know, I think that that's left people, you know, with all these different choices. And I think that that's contributed to the difficulties we have communicating, because I truly believe, not to get too heady, I don't want to get too serious, but I don't think that we're going to solve any of the world's problems until we learn first how to communicate to one another.
Well, we used to know how to do that, but then Twitter and Facebook came along and we forgot.
Oh my God, you're exactly right. I do believe that social media has contributed to the erosion of our ability to talk to each other and our ability even like, okay, I'm going to say something very controversial right now, and I hope this doesn't upset anybody. So okay. Trigger warning in place. I like The Last Jedi. I have a lot of little nitpicks about that movie, like I would any Star Wars movie, but it's the first Star Wars movie I really had liked in years. You know, I thought the prequels were a bit of a disappointment. I was not really high on Force Awakens. I thought it was a weak entry. But Last Jedi really shook things up and, you know, defied expectations and went in directions I didn't see coming, and I thought was... I really enjoyed it. So, but come to see that there are a ton of people out there that don't like The Last Jedi, hate it, hate Disney Star Wars. I think if there's one thing that we'll look back on this sequel trilogy is that it was a huge mistake in that first movie to not have a reunion of Luke, Han, and Leia. What a colossal mistake. See, now we're talking about nerd stuff. Like
well, yeah, you can have a good discussion about it, because I don't like the Disney movies at all. Now, but as a caveat to that, I loved Rogue One. I thought it was a great tale. I thought it was, you know, nonstop from beginning to end. And I also, you know, liked Solo, and a lot of people did not like that, but I thought it was enjoyable.
Right. Well, I think that this is the whole thing, is that, like, you're liking things that I don't like doesn't mean that we can't have a discussion. You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
let's
I think,
fight you know, about it.
Like, yeah, I mean, we might as well fight about chocolate versus vanilla.
Right.
Your taste is your taste, and whatever ice cream you like, or Star Wars movies, that's fine. But it's really become divided. So part of the sort of, you know, themes that will be throughout this documentary are not just about a nostalgic look back at the show, because I think a nostalgic look back at the show is I wouldn't make this documentary if that was the only thing
right.
that I'm going to be doing. It's really more a look back at an era in time when these technological tools and software, like, really amped up. I mean, what the iPhone, the first iPhone came out in 2008 or 2009, right? So 3 years after I started on Attack of the Show, the first iPhone came out, right? Like, so these tools were new, and we were just learning how to use them. And I think that now it's become, such a ubiquitous part of our lives that we have these tools, and I feel like technology has solved a lot of problems. It's also created a whole host of new ones that we didn't expect. And so while this film will be a nostalgic look at the show, it's also a look at this era in technology and how things kind of rose up as a way to contrast to where we are today. So part of that, I mean, and another thing I'll be doing with this documentary is actually interviewing everybody who had anything to do with the show via a podcast. So I've never heard of a documentary doing this where, and I've been in like 30 different documentaries. There's a couple on Amazon. I was in The People versus George Lucas. I'm in a documentary about the Flash Gordon movie. I'm in one called Doomed, The Untold Story of the Fantastic Four, of Roger Corman's Fantastic Four movie. Yeah, so look for those. Look for me in there. I'm in it for like a minute. But what's cool is the doc filmmaker will come in. We talk for like 30 minutes or an hour, and then they use me in the doc for 2 minutes, which is perfectly fine. I think that's what you're supposed to do. But we end up having a really great conversation. I thought, wouldn't it be nice to, like, share with the audience that's contributing to this documentary, share all of the interviews. So it's this fascinating conversation. And we may not even, some of the people we interview may not end up in the documentary at all. But at least you'll get to hear the voices of, you know, the writers from the show, every producer, you know, the people who did, like, prop effects and stuff. Because the editors, I was just talking to an editor from the show the other day who was telling me these crazy stories about the show, and like how once there was like a bomb scare and it was actually his fault and it was an accident. And, I mean, all these things will come out that's crazy. So you can follow along and listen to the unedited interviews on the podcast for the show. And then you'll watch the final documentary and maybe be disappointed about the choices I made. But
well, you can.
I really do want to. I was just going to say
that if people want to check out the trailer and find out more about the Kickstarter, they can go to attackofthedoc.com. I watched the trailer, and, you know, just to get back to what you're saying, everybody recording this and recording that, it looks like there's a treasure trove of things that you can share in the documentary. And then once people sign up at the various levels, then you were saying they get access to a podcast, they get a digital download. So this is a pretty cool thing to do. When you're making a documentary, like you said, you don't get all the stuff that's on the floor, the cutting room floor. In this case, you're going to get every single word. I like that.
Well, not just that. A couple things is I'm asking, what questions do you want me to ask? If I'm going to interview, if I can say, like, because what's going to happen eventually is this campaign's going to end, and there's a lot of people that we didn't reach. So what we're going to do is start a Patreon. So say if you are listening to this, you discovered this after the campaign for Attack of the Doc ends on November 12th, which is our last day that you'll be able to contribute. And that specifically is a Tuesday, a DVD's day. So that was selected on purpose. You can sign up for the Patreon. It'll just give you access to all of these interviews. We've also got some exclusive videos. In fact, we did a panel at the recent Los Angeles Comic-Con. Zach Selwyn was on the panel. I was on a panel with a couple of the producers, the editor, one of the editors that is working on the project. And we filmed the entire panel. And if you sign up as a backer at any level, you know, go to attackofthedoc.com, and then you can click over from there to go to the Kickstarter. You'll have access to these exclusive videos. You'll get to see, for example, the full like 30-minute panel from LA Comic-Con, along with like Zach and I after we're walking around the convention center as he was playing his guitar and singing and just sort of walking up and making. I mean, he's a guy that can, you give him like three keywords and he'll write, you know, an opera about it. So it's great. So that's one of the things is I want to like, first of all, I want to reassemble the fans of Attack of the Show. That community kind of went off in different directions, and I realized that community still exists. That community of people, the million people who watched Attack of the Show on a daily basis when it was on, like, they kind of all went in different directions, which is fine based on their interests, but I want to reassemble that family, so to speak, make this documentary. The plan is if we reach a certain funding level, we'll be able to show to backers only a screening of the first cut of the film in July 2020 at San Diego Comic-Con. We're going to get a room at a hotel, or if we have enough people, a movie theater down there. There's a movie theater at Horton Plaza, and we're going to screen a rough of the first cut of the movie. And then the plan is to use the notes from that, the feedback, to actually finish the documentary. And then we'll play conventions, film festivals, and eventually commercially release it. So, but backers are always going to get preferential, more video, and all of that. So I'm really excited about the whole thing.
I would love to see a Dragon Con with it next year.
Yes, Dragon Con, we may end up doing the same thing. It's just doing it's a backers only screening where you'll see, it won't be the finished movie, because we still have to, like, you know, there's sound mixing, right, and stuff like that. It'll be a rough, but at least we're trying to cut it down and get it to a certain point. One thing I have decided I want to do is I want to interview Kevin and Olivia last.
Right.
Because in doing this, it is sort of like a Seven Samurai, right? Or Magnificent Seven. I have to reassemble all these people and go and ask them, you know, based on their schedule, like when they can devote the time to do it. And one choice that we made is, we're interviewing everyone that was someone that was behind the scenes at a studio, right? So we're going to interview the producers, writers, you know, people who work behind the scenes at a studio. But everyone who was on camera talent, we're actually going to their home.
Wow.
So you'll get a chance to see it. These are things that you're seeing the talent in a way you never saw them. Kerry Keegan, for example, I don't know if you remember Kerry from the show. Yeah.
Power Girl.
We're going to interview her in her bedroom.
Nice.
Which can be very interesting. So each of the talent, you'll kind of get a glimpse into, like, well, this is their life. This is where they live. We interviewed actually Zach at his home office, where he's got like all sorts of memorabilia up and stickers and flyers and stuff from stuff that he's done. And Zach actually, like, each person that I see an interview, I get like I bring a hard drive so I can get like, well, let's see some of your photos. Obviously, all this stuff has to be cleared, you know, to be used in the documentary, and we're logging all of this. It's very laborious, the archiving process. But it gives you, like, you're just going to see photos that never appeared on social media, video that you've never seen. You'll see the show in a light you never saw, in addition to seeing, like, highlights and whatnot from the show. But there are deeper layers that will be explored, and I don't know, I just... We've been working on this opening sequence of the movie for a long time. And if we're successful, we're going to share this opening montage of the film that kind of gets you to the titles. And every time I look at it, it just gives me chills, because it's all about this era when I feel like we're a bit more optimistic about what the future held.
Well, you're right about that, because we came out of 9/11, and then we immediately went into a state of conflict, which we remain in. But throughout that, throughout that early to the end of, I guess, I always put things in weird eras. Like you had the Bush era, and then you had the Obama era. So throughout that era, when the internet just really became what it is now, guys like Jeff and me and a lot of other, and women too, but you know what I mean? But the Gen X people were like, wow, finally, finally, finally. And then now in 2019, I think you're almost a nerd if you're not a nerd, if you're not into Star Wars.
Right.
Because it is everywhere. And I was going to bring this point up, you know, when you were talking about Star Wars and Revenge of the, what was it?
The Last Jedi.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say Revenge of the Sea. The Last Jedi. But the people were arguing and fighting, and then, you know, you go on to 4chan, and then they all hate it, or you go to Reddit, and then back and forth, and, you know, social media and everything. But now, because Disney owns it, you know, you turn on Good Morning America, and there's Michael Strahan. We're going to be talking about Star Wars, but not disclosing that they own it and that they're pushing it. So, I mean, a lot of that commercialism wasn't there yet back in the early to mid 2000s, and so it was still something that you could go, oh, this is cool, this is mine, and that's just kind of how I feel about certain things. So I like this whole you know, returning to when, hey, we could talk to each other, not like a movie or like a movie, and not fight.
Well, I feel like in some way, you know, nerds or geek culture was so maligned by the mainstream, and now nerds are the mainstream.
Yep.
that it's like, I feel like nerds are kind of become bullies that eat their own. I mean, I'm serious. It's gotten to the point, like, one of the things I used to love about going to Comic-Con in San Diego or Dragon Con was getting in a conversation with a stranger because we both liked the same comic book.
Right.
You know, like, we both read the entire run of Strike Force Murituri, which is an obscure Marvel comic that I think should be made into a movie, but it's not really part of the MCU. It's a standalone science fiction story about people with superpowers that once they get these superpowers, they only live for a year.
Oh, wow.
And so the comic book starts with, this is the second team of Strike Force Murituri, and they're fighting and losing a war against an alien invasion of Earth, and Earth is losing this war. So they developed this technique to turn people into superpowered beings, except that they die in less than a year. So it's really tragic. It's just filled with pathos and drama, and it's got superheroes, but it's also an alien story. It's like, it's one of the best comic books. But I could get, you know, and then I would be standing next to someone in line for hours waiting to get into something. And then they would tell me about a comic book, and it's just, I miss having a conversation that didn't lead to, you're a Nazi, you know, like, you know, like, I kind of feel like, when did it happen? We're just like, you disagree with someone, and so then we go to name calling. I mean, name calling is, I don't understand it. It's really made me disconnect quite a bit from social media, just because I cannot relate to so much of the toxicity, you know, and the toxicity is everywhere. It's not like, this is the group that's toxic. It's both extremes, let's say.
I say, if you're in a group, you're toxic.
Rise of Skywalker trailer, I'm going to have to SWAT you now.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I actually like the trailer. I thought I got chills. I got a little, you know, weepy eyed, like, and I bought tickets immediately, and, you know, I am planning to write some kind of essay on, like, it's hard to judge what the sequel trilogy is. If they really did map out the story from the beginning and it's brilliant and we're all blown away, that would be cool. I'm not sure that that'll be the case, but we'll see, you know, like, it's hard to say. Like, you know, I think the best prequel movie was the last one, right? Revenge of the Sith. Right. Everyone agrees, kind of,
yeah.
that's the movie we were waiting for the whole time.
Now, are you familiar with Eric Butts on YouTube?
No, I am. I'm not.
He's a reaction video guy, and he also does unboxing. But he went viral earlier in the year because he saw the teaser trailer, and he started crying, and then everybody started making fun of him.
Yeah, I love that. I love that video. No, I saw, like, Look, I am that. I didn't come to full tears, but I got choked up watching that. I mean, look, I was 11 years old when I saw the first Star Wars movie. And when I say the first Star Wars movie, I mean when it was just called Star Wars, none of this episode stuff, right?
Like, yeah.
It was Star Wars. It was May of 1977. And in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine who's around my age, and we realized we were both at the same screening at the same movie theater in Detroit, which was the Americana Theater. I mean, Star Wars, people forget, that movie opened in 12 screens. They thought it's like, well, maybe it'll get some legs. I mean, of course, you know, it blew up and became the phenomenon, but you know, that was new, and it was, this was a time where there'd be like one or two science fiction movies a year and maybe a TV series or two, and that was it. You know, there's like, that was the, you know, a dark era. Now there's so much, quote, I hate this word, content, that people are overwhelmed. And we're hearing like The Mandalorian, the budget for every episode of The Mandalorian, which premieres on Disney Plus on November 12th. The same day that the Attack of the Dot campaign ends. That'll be, that hopefully, fingers crossed, will be a day to celebrate. $25 million per episode show. Well, I think it's going to be pretty amazing because apparently there are references to the holiday special in the first episode, along with, it's really old school Star Wars because The Mandalorian begins right after the end of the war between the Empire and the Rebellion. So
somewhere before the First Order, then.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's sort of this in-between period, like not quite directly after Return of the Jedi, but you know, a couple of years after that, the war ends, and it's sort of where it's sort of the seeds of the First Order, is my understanding. And there's just a lot of, I mean, I just love that Werner Herzog is in it, you know. And one of my favorite comedians, Bill Burr, is actually has a part on the show.
Bill Burr.
Cool?
Yeah, that's
Bill
awesome.
Bill Burr is in it.
Oh, wow. He's a great actor when he does.
It's like Breaking Bad.
Stuff. Yeah.
Breaking Boba Fett.
He's good. I really love seeing when he pops up on Joe Rogan's show.
Oh, yeah, I love him on there. And he always yells at Judd, don't get me in trouble.
No, he's just the best. But this documentary, just by showing how things were in 2005, that sort of early era, which, when you hear 2005, that was 14 years ago, right?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, maybe not that long ago in history, but in pop culture history, and when it comes to technology, where you know memory just doubles and doubles and doubles, I can't even imagine that. I've got this little SD card. It's got like 128 gigabytes on this. It's like, what? You know, back then, it was just the worst. You know, I mean, you don't remember how expensive things were and whatever. So just by showing this era and showing the show, kind of reflecting that nostalgia. And then interviews with the cast. I hope that people's minds are open to like, hey, this is kind of when things like this technology was new and we were just learning to use it. I mean, we didn't know what Twitter was for. Truthfully, it was sort of like to me, Twitter was like, and I didn't even sign up right away for Twitter. I thought it was like, it's just like sending a mass text. What's the big deal? You know. It's like, you know, I can text a couple people, like I'll just do that. And it's like, well, it's a different tool, but then the use of it has evolved. And I think that maybe social media, that the wrong things are rewarded, which is probably why my social media is just, I mean, one, I don't really tweet all that much. I just retweet my stuff from filmthreat.com.
It's easy to get addicted to narcissism. If somebody starts clicking, you see that heart that's underneath whatever you posted starts blowing up and you get likes. Oh, I'm validated now. And
they're supposed to be taking those likes away so you couldn't see them. Were they doing that on Instagram maybe?
Instagram, yeah. Not on Facebook. But no, yeah. But I mean, if that removes the purpose of it is self-validation. And, you know, South Park tackled that real early on with Facebook when that one guy in the town only had one friend, then it was Stan and, you know.
It's so funny. But yeah, no, like I, you know, look, we got to this place where we are with social media. We can't put the toothpaste back in the toothpaste tube. You know, we're stuck with this, but I do think that there has to be some sort of awakening of maybe these tools aren't good for us. Maybe some of these have to be used in moderation. Like with anything, you know, I believe alcohol and porn in moderation are good things.
Yeah, and in 2005, right? Porn was accessible, but not as ubiquitous.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's just, I mean, they had the Captain Marvel, you know, Axel Braun's Captain Marvel adult version out like so quick. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. But yeah, no, I just think that there was a thing that was united in that show. That was the place where all nerds went. And I don't think there is one now. There's a lot of different, like, there's certain people I like on there's certain, like, movie YouTube channels that I really like. There's some cool video game Twitch channels that are good, but there's not a place that you go for everything. And what I also loved about Attack of the Show is that that's where I would discover things. I mean, I would watch the show while I was working on my computer. Whenever they would mention something like, I don't know, a new video game, a new app, whatever, like, I'd look it up, or a new website. I would just go to it while
you're absolutely right, yeah. Because you can't. I have to go out and search for things now, and I'm not, yeah. You know, and I'm not getting like, oh, here, you should check this out. My cool friends on G4 are telling me about this. And so everything now is a reaction to stuff you already know about. I love Red Letter Media. That is one of my favorite YouTube channels.
I love those guys.
Those guys are hilarious. Yeah. And, you know, they're roughly our age, but they don't tell you anything you don't know about already.
Right. Well, that's one of the things that's always been my personal mission. I mean, it was the mission when I started Film Threat when I was 19 years old. I started Film Threat was to tell people about movies that were sort of at the bottom of the shelf.
That's why I bought it. That's why I went to the magazine store in Elmira, New York. I got a Film Threat because I want to find out about movies that other people don't know about.
Yep. Right. Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, that's always been like, if you read Film Threat now, if you go to filmthreat.com today and you kind of scroll through all the movies that are on the front page, there's a little thing that just says next. You can check out whatever the next film is that we're covering. And none of these movies are like, I mean, yeah, we cover the big ones, you know, that come out in theaters, but that's only three or four movies a week. There are so many other movies that get limited theatrical releases that come out on VOD that can be seen other places on streaming sites. So it's always been my mission to cover those movies and give them a voice that is on an equal level with the major studio films. So that mission continues. But also, you know, I branched out and started making films, and I had so much fun like working on this over the last year that there are a couple other documentaries I want to make, but I think that this one, what I'm hoping for, I shouldn't, you know, well, you know what? Who knows? If you listen to this podcast, you listen to it. I mean, what I'm hoping for is that this documentary could result in two things. One, we're looking at releasing it in theaters as part of one of those, like, it's in theaters for one day only, right. You know,
like and a Fathom Events kind of thing.
Like a Fathom Events kind of thing where it's like, you know, you see like get a little bonus material, like a Q&A, which could result in potentially a reunion of people from the show. So what I would like to see is this movie come out and prompt some sort of reunion. If it's like,
hey, even if it's like the B team, Candace Bailey and Matt Myra show up at the theater.
It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It's just some version of members of the cast getting together for a discussion. It could be at a panel at a convention, kind of paired with, you know, a screening of the documentary. But you know, one, I got to get funded first. I mean, our first level of funding is we're trying to get 25,000. I realize the key to success of doing a successful Kickstarter is to have a failed one first.
Yeah.
Hey, and that happened with Film Threat. You know, we failed, and it's just like, hey, let's take a let's look at this and retool. And same thing with Attack of the Doc. I think I just wasn't really ready yet. I hadn't done what I really needed to do in terms of research. But the first funding level will get us so we can shoot interviews in Los Angeles. Anyone that's here will be able to actually shoot everyone that's in LA. The next funding level will allow us to actually get on the road because I want to include people like Morgan Webb, Adam Sessler, because they appeared on Attack of the Show. Will O'Neill, they're in the Bay Area. I want to talk to Sarah Underwood, who lives outside of Portland.
So she's all over the place.
Yeah, so she's all over the place. So what I want to do is travel and make sure to get the interviews with everyone that's not in Los Angeles. And then each funding level kind of gives us more money to just do a better documentary because, you know, if you ask an indie filmmaker, you know, how much money they need for their movie, it's like, well, how much money do you have?
Right.
You know? So I'll do the best version I can make at the level I have, but really we want to at least get to our first stretch goal, which allows us to travel, because I think that that's going to have a huge impact. And, you know, if we get to our next funding goal that allow us to do a big screening at San Diego Comic-Con, and then additionally, there's all sorts of clearances and whatnot. I'm actually meeting with one of the top level executives who was at G4 who wants to help with the documentary. So I do know that like every day someone new from the show reaches out to me. So part of it, and part of doing the campaign and getting it funded, is to convince the people that were involved in the show to be involved in the documentary based on the level of enthusiasm.
Right.
So if we show that, hey, there's enthusiasm for this project, there are people that want to see this get made, you should be a part of it. But it's sort of pointless for me to ask people to be in the documentary if there's not money to make the documentary. You know? Right. And so we got to at least reach, I would like to get to that first stretch goal. We're actually closing in. We're 20 days out and we're 70% funded for our first goal. But I really want to get us to that second stretch goal, because that is just going to make the documentary much, it's just going to make it much better.
Now, if you're out there and you want to donate or become a part of this, go to attackofthedoc.com. You can also follow on Twitter @attackofthedoc, and it's, you know, DOC, and Facebook.com.
And Instagram also.
Yeah, Instagram and attackofthedoc on Facebook.
I'll announce this today. We just launched our YouTube channel. It's just Attack of the Doc. We're Attack of the Doc on everything. So if you look up the YouTube channel, we'll be posting clips there. But again, if you're a backer, you'll have access to exclusive clips that will not be made public.
Are you going to do reaction videos?
Reaction videos. I don't know. I mean, one fun thing we thought about doing was doing reaction videos to people today watching segments from the past that they forgot.
That they were in. That would be cool. You know, the first reaction video ever was two girls, one cup.
Oh, no.
Was it really?
I think so. That was the first one that went viral. For, you know.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I think the reaction videos are kind of ridiculous now, because it's,
yes,
it's just anyone can do it.
It's a routine. It's a business. It's a, yeah, it's just a machine.
Well, I hope some of our listeners can kick in. You want to tell people like what some of the levels are that they can support?
The one that I think is the most popular, we just priced it at the average Kickstarter reward is like $40. $40, whatever. That gets you full access to the podcast, all the episodes, and all the exclusive videos that are backers only videos. Additionally, you get a copy of the movie on video on demand. You get a digital copy of the movie, which will have all sorts of fun extras, right? That's $40. Mm. For $25, we are selling a patch. It's an exclusive crew patch. I'm a big fan of like when you know people work on a production and there's like the crew jacket or whatever. So we do have a level that's a crew jacket level.
Cool.
And we also have a level where you'll be able to go to a party. So I recommend that. That's at a higher level. And we do have a producer's package. And we've had three people jump in for the producer's package, which gives you a producing credit on the movie. And which means it'll be on IMDb, because that's what, if you really look at like what producer credits are, it's the people who put together the financing.
Right.
But also if we're successfully funded, everyone who donates gets a credit on the movie. So there'll be a credit on the end credit scrolling, your name, very tiny, will be in the end credits, along with the producer credits will get their own card. Right. So, but yeah, no, I really wanted to make this like something where we're doing this project together, where we kind of reassemble the old fan base for Attack of the Show, and then, you know, check in on all the people that were involved, because everybody's gone off in different directions. I think it'll be a lot of fun to chat with everyone.
So as busy as you are, and you are a very busy guy, it sounds like, when do you find time to watch television or movies, and what are some of the things you've seen this year that you really like?
Oh, my God. A bunch of things. One, well, I'll tell you about a couple movies that I think are amazing. Recently, I saw a movie called Spell. This is like a little bonus material. This is like a DVD thing.
Yeah, right.
A film called Spell about a guy who after the tragic loss of his girlfriend, goes to Norway to kind of heal himself because they went on a trip to Norway together at one time. And it's all this bizarre stuff that happens to him while he's in Norway. And it's spiritual. It's weird. It's funny. The guy who's the lead, he has to be a stand-up comedian. Because he's so funny, just naturally funny. Another film that I'd recommend, this is about to come out. It's called The Other Todd. And it's a science fiction movie that I want to compare it to Back to the Future, but it's not Back to the Future. But it does involve time travel of a guy that goes back in time and confronts himself. He's sort of this schlubby, you know, loser with not any goals. He's sort of like middling about his relationship with his girlfriend. And then a version from him from the future, who's way cooler, way more confident, comes back and basically tries to get rid of him and replace him.
That sounds cool.
And
it sounds similar to that Paul Rudd show on Netflix that just came out.
I was just going to say, like, this is the indie version of that. Although I saw the trailer for that Paul Rudd show and basically felt like I watched the whole show.
Right.
So, yeah, it kind of gave it away. This movie... The Other Todd, really clever, really good cast. That thing was awesome. So not out yet, but coming out. And then highly recommend another documentary. And this is going to sort of, this is a little Attack of the Show reference. I can't swear on the show. Can
yeah, you can.
I?
Yeah, you can.
For now.
Okay, cool. There's a documentary. I did a podcast about it. I talked to the filmmakers. The documentary is called Fuck You All, The Uwe Boll Story. And it's all about Uwe Boll. And, you know, of course, if you know Uwe Boll, he did all those really cheesy, like, video game movie adaptations. None of them were ever good. He's been called the worst filmmaker of all time. He made numerous appearances on Attack of the Show. He also famously boxed his online movie critics, like, where they went in the ring thinking, oh, this is a goof, and he just beat the crap out of them. So this documentary, you can look it up on VOD, but it's hysterical. And you find out Uwe Boll's retired and basically is in the restaurant business.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't even make movies anymore.
Hey, I'm looking at the
Wikipedia. Is his restaurant any good?
Huh. He's opening one in China. China.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. But check it out. And then another movie that I think you guys will love. It's very inspirational. It's called The Insufferable Gru, spelled G-R-O-O. And okay. It's about a guy from Utah named Stephen Gru. And he is a filmmaker, and he's made almost 200 feature films. He shoots them all generally in a weekend. None of them are good, but he has like these crazy fans. One of his biggest fans is Jack Black, and Jack Black is so enamored by him, he actually agrees to appear in a bit part in one of his movies.
Oh, wow.
Jack Black is actually in the film. It's so funny. This guy, Stephen Gru, I mean, you can see why he's just like, this is a guy that's why it's titled The Insufferable Gru. But it's so delightful, and I love movies about filmmaking, the filmmaking process, and it's just hysterical. I mean, see, look, I should bring DVD Newsday back, but
hey, you can...
actually, I mean, I guess I could, but actually I do the Film Threat podcast, which comes out like twice a week. It's conversations with filmmakers. So a lot of the filmmakers I mentioned are actually on the podcast. So when people ask me like, hey, you should bring DVD Newsday back, it's like, you know, I did Film Threat for years before that and also years after. You can just listen to the Film Threat podcast or just read the website, you know.
Have you heard anything? So, have you heard anything about The Lighthouse? That's the one movie I'm really, really wanting to see right now.
I've seen it. It's effed up. It's weird.
Okay.
I recommend doing substances before.
Yeah. I love The Witch. I thought Eggers' first movie, The Witch, was amazing. It was scary and really well done.
You're gonna love it, and I don't want to say anything more about it, but it is absolutely fantastic. I love that, like, where he does it like 3:4, you know, the aspect ratio, mm-hmm. and it's shot in black and white.
Right.
Adds this kind of dreamlike quality to it. So, and I love, it's going to sound crazy, a lot of people know I'm a Batman fan, I like Robert Pattinson as Batman.
So do I.
That's a good choice.
I think they're going to go back to Detective Batman instead of Fantastic Iron Suit Batman.
Yeah, it's not going to be this like, yeah. I mean, basically, he became Iron Man, you know, by the time that Zack Snyder got a hold of the character. But I like the idea of him just being a straight up detective, of being like trying to be one step ahead of these criminals and just trying to hold it together along with keeping his secret identity to protect the ones he loves. Like, let's just get back to an old school Batman story. I mean, this kind of feels like a little bit maybe like Batman year two or year three, you know, it's like not quite Batman year one. But I really like this idea a lot. And I think having seen Robert Pattinson, I mean, I did not like those Twilight movies, even though I was forced to see them. I never liked them, but he really does have, I mean, especially, what was that movie he was in? It was A Good Time, you know, that film? I didn't even know that he was in it. It's one of those things where it's like, he's one of those actors now that gets so lost in the role, you forget it's him. So
I just know him as Cedric Diggory.
Yep.
That's true. Yep. But yeah, no, but I really think that like what he'll do with Batman, I mean, I'm really excited to see like what his take is on it, because I always had problems with the Michael Keaton. I thought was a great Batman, but was not a great Bruce Wayne. And I feel like Christian Bale was a really great Bruce Wayne. I think he was a good Batman. And I think that maybe, you know, those things can come together with Pattinson's take on it. I'm super excited for it.
Well, good. I'm happy. I'm optimistic about that as well.
No, I have just to get back to the documentary, I have a couple hopes that I have for it. I hope that you kind of touch on the whole G4 getting screwed by the Esquire network aspect.
Oh, no, no. Oh, not only are we going to touch on it, we have a whiteboard with like all the things that we plan to do with the documentary. Like, so obviously we're going to interview certain people. There's sort of visual styles that we'll be taking, but I intend to talk to the executive who personally made the decision to cancel the network.
To cancel the G4 network? Out, yeah.
Correct. To basically end things, because I'd always heard rumors that people didn't know what to do with G4 because they couldn't figure out how to market to that demographic. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You owned that space, and it was just, I've never heard of something as successful as a show or a network like that that got canceled for being successful. It's usually like something like it doesn't get the ratings or it's not generating the money, so it gets canceled, right?
Right.
But I think that G4 just didn't last long enough to get into the streaming era where it could have been, because it could have easily just been a streaming show, right? It could have been, you know, in a lot of different places. So those choices didn't exist yet, but we plan to find out, and this is why I'm meeting with one of the executives next week from G4, who's going to give me some inside info. We intend to track down the person who made the decision, and because we want to ask exactly why.
Right.
And I feel like they felt like they didn't know how to market to this audience, because my theory is, I think this audience is very smart. I think this audience is an audience of skeptics. I think it's an audience that has a lot of opinions. It's an audience, Attack of the Show in G4 was an audience that represented the internet. So I feel that because it's a smarter audience, there's obviously some skepticism that goes with looking at how they use commercials. I mean, TV commercials, traditional marketing methods that worked 10 years ago don't work now, you know?
Right.
So
they have to create fake, they have to create a controversy to get people to fight about it, and then everybody goes and sees it.
Right.
I mean, I find that so ridiculous. Even this whole recent thing with like Martin Scorsese and you know, Francis Coppola, like, I feel like Scorsese made some offhand, like, you know, these movies aren't. I disagree with what he said. I think that if you actually look, like, what, about 400 plus movies get major theatrical releases on an annual basis, how many of those are actually superhero movies?
Right.
It's not even 10%, right?
It's not even 5%.
But they take up the oxygen in the room from the standpoint that they're big at the box office. But, you know, was that done to get press for Irishman?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's sad to think that the way I'm hearing about The Irishman is because Martin Scorsese made a negative comment about Marvel movies. Right. You know? It just seems like we live in such a weird world where outrage is the only way something can get attention. So I wonder how much of that is manufactured or calculated.
Well, I think if you see a tweet, you know, say the new trailer comes out for Star Wars, the newest Star Wars movie, and then a tweet comes out and says, some people are bothered by the female lead. Then the next thing you see is a story about it the next morning on, again, Good Morning America or something. And you see it's all tied in and they just keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. So tune out and watch what you love.
Yeah, I just don't get that. So everything's got to be driven by a controversy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there isn't controversy. For the most part, you talk to people, they like the character of Rey. I think what they don't like is the disrespect that was sort of paid to the legacy characters. I mean, maybe looking back story-wise, that works. I actually liked Luke's arc. He kind of followed the same arc as Obi-Wan Kenobi, who just sort of retreated away from wars. He became like this sort of like the peaceful Jedi that, you know, all Jedi, I guess, aspire to be. So I liked his character arc, and it kind of closed a chapter even for my life, having seen and fallen in love with Star Wars in 1977, but not reuniting the trio of Han, Luke, and Leia was a huge mistake. I think when we look back at the sequel trilogy, you'll see, and I think that there are lessons that we'll be able to draw from building a franchise like Star Wars. You got to listen to your fan base. If there's certain things, you know, I mean, you can call it fan service or you can call it a fan job or whatever you want. That's a moment that would have been amazing. And I think you really needed to do that in the first movie. The first movie could have been the handoff to the new cast, because I like the new cast. I like Poe, Finn, and Rey, you know?
Right.
I like these new characters.
I think Porgs
are funny. What's that?
I said, I like Finn the best. I think that they could do a lot more with him. And in the last movie, I thought he was kind of wasted. I mean, I thought it was cool what kind of did. But I think he is a cool character, and I would like to have seen them explore him a little bit more.
He's basically the guy that said, I want no part of this war. I don't want to enforce and do the things that have been drilled into my head. He turned against his programming. It's a really fast, a stormtrooper who, like, turned his back. I mean, it's so cool. There are a lot of great ideas that are kind of jumbled up in there. I kind of like, as they are in all the Star Wars movies, it seems like if you're going to do this thing, plan out three movies from the beginning, because it clearly seems that and what's funny is at the end of this thing, Last Jedi may end up being the best of these three sequel films.
Wow. Think of that.
I'm pretty sure that Force Awakens will be looked on as the weakest and the biggest missed opportunity. Because I think, here's my theory. I plan to write about this on Film Threat, is that if you look at these three movies, they might have made a better episode 10, 11, and 12.
Oh, so they could have done some stuff in between.
They could have done episode 7, 8, and 9, could have been about older Han, Luke, and Leia, and Lando, and Boba, and it could have been like all the... It could have been a true sequel, because look at how many, and here's my argument for this, how many Star Trek movies did they make and that cast was old?
Yeah, really old.
They made, I mean, if you include Generations, that's seven Star Trek movies with old people from the 60s who were making Star Trek movies into the 90s.
Wow.
So why didn't they just look on this and go, okay, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, sure, we're going to introduce a new young generation, but we want you in all of these movies. Map it out from the beginning and get that. I mean, and Carrie Fisher's tragic death is just horrific. You know, it's just, I'm glad that they're going to use old footage of her, and I'm sure some digital enhancement to have her in episode 9, but they really should have told. That's why I think that, like, this feels like there's so much backstory that we still don't know about. I mean, who was Max von Sydow's character at the beginning of Force Awakens handing off that drive?
Who was Snoke? You know,
who was Snoke? Like, all these things, like, I feel like episode 7, 8, and 9, just call them 10, 11, 12, and then just make a different 7, 8, and 9. But at this point, and this may or may not happen in my lifetime, I'm going to say it's going to happen in my lifetime. At some point, here's my prediction, they're going to remake Star Wars.
Oh.
They're going to remake all 9 Star Wars movies, and it'll be a slightly different story. And, you know, the story will kind of hit the main beats, but you're going to see new stuff. And it's, look, and as proof, they did Dumbo as a live action. Mm-hmm. They're doing the live action remakes of every Disney property.
And that Pete's Dragon was terrible.
Pete's Dragon. Well, that might have been one of the better ones, to be honest. Carl Urban was in that. Yeah. It was okay. But at best, these live action remakes are okay. I didn't even bother to go see The Lion King. I just couldn't stand the. I wasn't into it. So mark my words, they are going to remake Star Wars.
There's an article on Film Thread I just bookmarked. Disney. Yeah, Disney and why they're making the new movies. So woke Disney in the theory.
Disney's sort of woke agenda with all of their remakes of their classic films. It's weird. There's even, I saw a trailer for it and couldn't believe this existed. Okay. They're on Disney Plus only. It's a Disney Plus premiere, not in theaters, not on video. They're putting out a live action Lady and the Tramp.
All right.
And the trailer looks so amateur. There's like fan films that are way better than this.
Right.
Well. So it's pretty awful.
And we know you got to go in a few minutes, but just before you go, I just want to say my other hope for the documentary is I kind of hope we get to see some maybe behind the scenes or some interviews about when they knew that the end was coming and like Olivia left and Kevin left and like Matt Myra and Candace Bailey stepped in to take over the show, kind of maybe after they already saw the writing on the wall. I'd like to see maybe a little bit about that era when.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly our plan right now is to focus on those kind of like health scion days of the beginning of.
I'm definitely looking forward to see that stuff and the giant pie and the hot sauce drinking contest and all that.
Among other things, but but mainly it's that Kevin and Olivia era was some kind of magic. I think that's what most people associate with the best of Attack of the Show, but they'll absolutely be included, you know, sort of where the show was going, what was happening. And I want to get answers. I want to get like what led to, because I can't think of anything in TV history where something was so successful where they just decided, nope, it's over.
Yeah, and
I
then
could definitely see
Esquire Network
show continuing.
Esquire Network just folded after like a year or something.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean, it was just that didn't last long. But but look at Nerd Culture. Nerd Culture is ever. I mean, the biggest channels. I mean, YouTube without Nerd Culture is. You know, a place to find out, you know, how to fold a shirt.
Now that they've taken all the conspiracy videos out, it was nerd culture and conspiracy when I would spend the entire evening watching videos. And now I'm,
you just got to watch people eating super hot chicken wings.
Yeah. And do AMSR. Chris Gore, thank you very much for coming on the show with us tonight. Everybody can check out attackofthedoc.com. That'll give you all the information, plus a link to the Kickstarter. And of course, you can follow on social media.
And just tell everybody what you got going on, plug your podcast and all that.
Oh, please. Yeah. You just go to filmthreat.com. You can check out the Film Threat podcast, which is on Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, everything. Check that out. Especially if you like a lot of the movies I was talking about earlier, we talk about movies like that all the time, every day. That's why when I kind of see people complaining so much about Star Wars, I think to myself, you should just see some other movies. You know, if you live on a diet of Disney, Pixar, Star Wars, that's not good. It's like, you know, just eating fast food. You want to have a balanced media diet, which has always been my philosophy. That's why I've done Film Threat for, 30 plus years now. So, but this documentary, I want to be something very special, not just as a tribute to the show, and not just for the nostalgia, but also to take a look at our recent past and how things were slightly different. Things were different back then. I hope that you'll support it. yeah, it definitely was. It felt different. I think I don't know. So So I hope people go to attackofthedoc.com and check it out. And thank you guys for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and hope some of our listeners can help kick in, maybe get you to that first goal at least.
And anything you need to promote or anything, just shoot Jeff a note and we'll mention it for sure. So
yeah,
I'll be coming back on to talk about the documentary when it's ready to come out.
Awesome.
And hopefully we'll see you at DragonCon next year.
Oh, you will, for sure. All right. I'll see you there.
Best of luck with everything.
Take care. Thanks again.
Thanks, Chris.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
Good luck.
Bye now.
Like current events and want to be the smartest among your friends? Then the Power Pod is the show for you.
The Power Pod is a weekly recap show where we cover the current events of the week.
It's a show where we're not afraid to get serious.
And we're not afraid to have some fun.
So try us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, the WSB Radio app, WSBRadio.com, Stitcher, CastBox. Okay. Anywhere there are podcasts, we are there. So power up. With the Power Pod!
Hey guys, here's another one of Radio Labyrinth's awesome sponsors, Bailey Tree Care LLC in Gainesville, Georgia. You can contact Nick Bailey at 770-530-9421 or Jason Chappell at 404-234-2599. Bailey Tree Care. They are Northeast Georgia's premier choice for high-quality tree care services at affordable prices. Their tree care experts bring an excellent safety record and over 10 years of experience in the industry. Bailey Tree Care specializes in residential products and offers free estimates for all your tree service needs. Residential tree care, certified arborists and tree climber, tree trimming and pruning, tree removal, stump grinding and removal, shrub trimming, pruning, underbrush clearing, and mulch and firewood sale. Safety, professionalism, and affordability. Call them today to discuss your tree care need. That's Bailey Tree Care LLC. So that was cool, man. Everybody, again, go to attackofthedoc.com. Check out everything Chris Gore's got going on. And also Film Threat,
which
I just bookmarked because it is like a magazine, man. And even though it's a website, it's one place you can go. You don't have to look at a bunch of different things. It's not a blog. So go check that out.
If you're into movies, man, that's like the place you got to go.
And I got the same feeling, you know, talking with them on the phone and I was looking at the website, the same feeling I got when I first bought an issue of Film Threat magazine back in the early 90s, which, again, you turned me on to it. So it might have been 94, 93, whatever.
Right.
Doesn't matter. But they had fun articles, and there was comedy in there, and they were subversive. And it was like, wow, if, you know, you have a subscription to Premiere, and they really like, you know, self-filleting themselves. And right. Film Threat comes along, and wow, I just loved it. And that it's totally Gen X, and, you know.
Like Premiere was the spy magazine of movie magazines.
Yeah.
Film Threat was more like the National Lampoon of movie magazines.
So I'll talk to Chris anytime, man. I wish we could have just kept talking to him about movies. He's a great guy. And anytime he's in Atlanta, please have him come by.
Yeah, we could have talked to him if we had done a show from DragonCon, but we decided to do that live show over at the late Relapse Theater.
So we'll be back next week with some more interviews. Let's do our staff picks and then we'll do housekeeping. Mine's real simple. Castle Rock returns to Hulu this week, and it's a reimagining of Misery with Lizzie Kaplan. I like your little note here. Annie Wilkes can't be that hot.
That's why would you care if she kidnapped you?
Well, you'd still care if you got kidnapped. It wouldn't matter.
Not if it was her.
And
I'd be like, more power to you.
So you'd be more happy being kidnapped by somebody if they're attractive?
It's Lizzie Kaplan versus freaking, what's her name?
Well, yeah.
You know who I mean.
I know who you're talking about. She got an Oscar for it, too. Yeah. But the point wasn't what she looked like. She was nuts.
Yeah, I know. But if she's nuts and she looks like Lizzie Kaplan, you'd be all right with it.
All right. Would you rather get kidnapped by Johnny Depp or, I don't know, Rodney Dangerfield when he was alive? Keeping that you love Rodney. But
yeah, got to go with Rodney on that one.
So I'm going to check that out. And also, I got to give a call back to Steph who recommended Woody Harrelson on WTF. With Mark Maron. That was so cool because you learned stuff about him that you didn't know. And I enjoyed
about
it.
His dad.
Yeah, and he's just, even that Mike Pence was his mentor because he went to this religious school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. How long is that episode? 6 hours?
No, it's not that long. But, there, you know, it would be shorter if, you know, he didn't keep going, yeah, Yeah. Anyway. And then the other thing I watched was Reign of the Superman. Did you see that?
No, is that one of those animated?
Yeah, I love all the
DC animated movies are great.
Yeah,
I think they all look the same though. I wish they'd mix
it up a
little.
Well, I like the consistency of it.
Yeah.
This one's a little different actually.
Is it?
They're a little more modern looking than in the past.
But it's all that dark. It's like dark colors and muted.
No, not this one.
No?
No, check it out. It's worth it. It's worth a download.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
And like I said, we can argue about
The Watchmen.
We'll see. Maybe I'll watch it by then.
To finish the whole thing.
I'll finish the whole thing.
And
I'll tell you real quick, you know, it's not
Don Johnson, man.
It has more to do with me having reverence for the source material.
Yeah, I know. And you like that new
The Doomsday Clock,
and you wish it would tied into that, but this is
It's just taking source material and making something new out of it.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's fine. I'll give it a second chance before
this
I nope.
Lindelof's take on the whole thing, and you know, he maybe started this whole process before that Doomsday Clock came out. So,
well, I think he came up with some idea and said, "Oh, just slap the Watchmen on this."
No, I mean the Watchmen comic books are canon to this story, so
right. I know it's
he's
30
not
years
changing
in the future.
Anything, yeah.
By the way, Mike TV, which just finished its successful run with Preacher, the final season, will be doing Watchmen. So look for this show dropping over the weekend after Radio Labyrinth drops. So check that out. It's Mike TV with Lisa Krause and our good friend
Rockdale Tiger.
That's right, Rockdale Tiger. He has the name, you know, Dean. Yeah. What's your staff pick?
My main staff pick was going to be that Mrs. Fletcher on HBO, which I think looks pretty good.
Yeah.
But I want to plug Wellington Paranormal because the season 2 just started, and you can't get the show in America. You have to steal it, and I don't care anymore. Fuck the police.
You can't get it in America anywhere?
Find it, download it, torrent it, do what you have to do because it's hilarious.
Well, it's the same people that did
it is.
What
it's
We Do
the
in the
people
Shadows.
From What We Do in the Shadows, and it's those two cops that were in that movie,
uh-huh.
And they just go around Wellington and investigate this paranormal stuff. In the first episode of season 2, there's a giant sea creature that's like attacking the town, and you have to see it. It's all hilarious. Right. So,
and I see that you watch Creepshow too. Do you like that first
I watched
episode?
The first one. I didn't know what the hell was going on. Was that meteor shit?
Yeah,
that
loaded with Easter eggs. Yeah. Yeah. It was a cool story, though.
And the second part of the first episode was pretty cool. That's the girl from Walking Dead. She's Judith on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty neat. With the little dollhouse and stuff.
That was creepy as hell.
I'm going to keep watching those, yeah.
And that's a show you have to sign up for Shudder. By the way, it's bringing so many people into Shudder.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's doing well for
them? Yeah, Shudder's doing really well with that. And Shudder is I'd have to get rid of one thing if I were going to get Shudder because I'm not adding any
more
stuff.
Well, I'm canceling Hulu at the end of October. So I got to watch all these Castle Rocks real quick.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pick up Epics again. Hopefully they'll have all of Get Shorty out by then because they're doing it week by week by week. So I think there's only three episodes out.
I think I'll cancel my subscription to Blacked.com. And I still probably pay for Captain Stabbing every month.
Yeah, do you?
Let's do some housekeeping. Is that it?
Yeah, that's all for me. I think that Mrs. Fletcher show looks like it's going to be pretty funny on HBO.
And
this week.
I'm going to go ahead and just shut up and watch The Watchmen. And if I don't like it, I don't like it. And if I do, I'll keep watching it.
Yeah, Don Johnson was really good. And
Let's see. What are we doing next week? So next week it'll be you, me, and Steph and Autumn. Hopefully all four of us together. We'll be doing the usual thing. On November 6th, which is 2 days after my birthday, we're going to be joined by... There you go. We're going to be joined by Beth Van Elswick, who's going to be talking hemp and CBD. She runs her own company out in Portland.
Right.
Or out in Oregon somewhere.
Well, she's in Astoria, Washington.
Astoria, Washington, yeah. Not Oregon. So, anyway, wrong state. And then,
but it's legal out there.
Yes, it's legal.
But she does the hemp, which is the
fibrous material.
Yeah, the non-psychoactive stuff.
Oh, so she doesn't grow the regular stuff?
Her company does just like hemp for CBD and stuff like
okay,
that. So.
Okay. And then on November 20th, we're going to have Shane Morton from Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell and Roy Woolley from Face Off.
Yeah.
So
we tried to get those guys in here before Halloween, but trying to get two makeup artists, two famous makeup artists from Atlanta,
right,
into the studio before Halloween is almost impossible. Roy works for Netherworld, so he's pretty busy until after Halloween.
We'll probably take Thanksgiving week off, but we haven't decided yet. And then we'll be talking to some more people in December. So the thank you, Jeff, for writing everything down. Underneath all that, he wrote down all the movies that
We'll put those up on
we'll put them up, yeah, the movies that Chris Gore recommended. So everybody have a good weekend. Look for Mike TV to drop either Saturday or Sunday morning, and you're going to be listening to this after the movie night that we had. Hopefully that went well.
Yeah, it looks
it went great.
I've been trying to send out invites to people because some people that I thought maybe would say at least they were interested hadn't responded yet. So it's a Thursday night, so it's tough. But
it's a Thursday night. It's our first one, so hopefully it went well. We're going to do it again regardless, so just stay tuned.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the Zombieland 2, though. It's getting a lot of good reviews.
Me too. We'll talk about that next week as well. We never really got to talk about Walker Stalker. We totally glazed that
over. Yeah, we should talk about that. Maybe we can get Ming to call in.
Well, you real quick, we met the two people we really wanted to meet.
Yeah, Danny Lloyd was the one I really wanted to meet.
From The Shining.
From The Shining. Danny from The Shining.
And I met one of my favorite character actors from Deadwood. And I also like him on Fear the Walking Dead. I mean, he's the reason I watched it.
Right.
Initially, that'd be Garrett Delahunt, and he was so nice. I thought he was about seven feet tall, but he wasn't. Because he always looks, he's larger than life.
Yeah.
But a real cool, down-to-earth guy.
Yep.
And I enjoyed talking to him. So, all right, we'll talk more about that next week. Thanks for listening. Until that time,
keep it canon.
Hello, special friends. Thank you so much for listening to Radio Labyrinth. I want to thank my two very special Patreon members, Jason Chappell and Mike Hall. You know Mike Hall, Atlanta Pizza and Euro. If you haven't been there, go. He's so friendly and cool. You'll feel just like it is local, but you'll feel like, man, this place knows me. They're my friends. Go check them out. And if you're not already a Patreon donator, please check us out at patreon.com/Tim Andrews. We have a lot of awesome tiers to choose from. It supports us. It helps us keep going. So please go check it out. Patreon.com/Tim Andrews. I want to thank everyone else who's donating. The big dogs, Al McMeekin, Sean Hall, Mike Spittler, Daniel Pitts. Hi, Daniel. Chad Shepard, Andrew Hopkins, Jonathan Wilson, Steve Knutson. I wonder if that's Knutson when the K is silent. Steve, what say you? Melissa Knowles, Brian Smith, John Sutherland. Hi, John. Mike Duh, Leslie Norman, Beth Van Elswick. I heard you on this episode. You were so sweet. Matt Carter, Eric Malmstrom, Garrett Kemble, Keith Tate, Emily Warren, Debbie McDonald, Buck Monterey, hey Buck, Christopher Durr, Jesse Rosinski, Alan Barker, Marty Johnson, Gwen Ketchum, Andrew Amalazzi, Jeff Peterson, Ian Stull, Sherry Doherty, Dean Poole, Chris Cosentino, Brendan Price, Leslie Haney, Andrew Harbin, Mike Weiland, Aaron Roberts, Wayne Blair, Jeremy Terman, Rusty, I miss you, buddy. I feel like I haven't seen you in a long time. Rusty Weinberg, Kevin Stokes, Chris Weiland, Denise Reynolds, Brian Jackson, David C. Funk It Up, Colin Oman, Amber Gilpatrick, Herb Lamb, Dave Benson, Kevin Schwartz, Troy Prescott, Sam Wells, Walt Murray, Ryan Wilson, Kit Beatty, 80. Luke Conigoyo, Ruben Aguilar, Mark Priero, Chris Knight, Trent, Nick Starks. What up, Nick? Jason Hauft. What up, Jason? Bradley, what's your whole name? Let me look. Bradley, Schumpert. Hi, Bradley. I'm going to call you Brad, right? Are people calling you Bradley? I'll call you whatever you want. Lauren Calderman, Robert Calderman, you guys. Robert Haley, Nicholas Frank, Dustin Lawler, and Wendy Muller. We love you guys. Thank you so much. Like I said, we couldn't do it without you. Please, please keep it canon.